There is a madness that comes over us. A madness that can be cured only by feeding. Gabriel had given some of his blood to Aiden. That was what he'd obviously been intending to do when he sent them away. And how else could Aiden be so much better, unless something hadn't taken the edge off his craving? But that meant Gabriel must be very hungry. "We don't have time for this," Tana said desperately, trying to sound reasonable despite her frayed nerves. "Gabriel, we have to get to the gate before dawn. There might be paperwork, or a line. It's not safe to stay here anymore." Gabriel wasn't looking at her. He contemplated Midnight's throat. "It's definitely not safe to kill someone here," Tana said louder, touching his arm. It had worked in the past, being calm, acting as though everything were normal. She hoped it would work again. "Gabriel, we have to go. Stop being so scary." At that, he looked over and smiled again, spinning Midnight in his arms as if they'd been dancing. Winter caught her and held her upright. "I can wait a little longer," Gabriel said. "A very little longer." "The car keys?" Tana demanded, holding out a trembling hand. He fished in his pockets, an utterly normal gesture, then dropped them into her palm ceremoniously. She picked up the bag of cash and jewels from beside the hood of the car, shoving it into her purse. "I won't always obey you," he said softly. "One night, you will ask me for something I cannot give." She'd started to relax, but his words sent a fresh spike of terror up her spine. Marching to the driver's side, she closed her eyes and took a deep breath, trying to steady herself before she got in, then slamming the door behind her. She was shaking again and mad about it. "What is it about vampires?" Aiden muttered as he walked toward the car. "Only ever interested in biting people that don't want to get bit." Midnight sniffed, offended. "He was interested." "Didn't bite, though," said Aiden, getting into the back seat of the car. "Midnight," Winter touched his sister's arm. His voice carried in the parking lot. "We don't have to go with them." She looked at him coldly. "No more birthdays." Tana turned the ignition, listening to the comforting growl of the motor and inhaling the faint burned plastic scent of the heater. The clock on the dashboard read a little after 2 in the morning. Gabriel took shotgun. Winter and Midnight joined Aiden in the back. Winter made sure he got in before his sister, positioning himself in the middle like some kind of chaperone. As if when the infection kicked back into high gear, Aiden was going to care whom he attacked. Not to mention that Aiden liked boys just fine anyway. It was easy to get to Cold Town, even without looking at a map. All Tana had to do was follow the path of warning signs. "Restricted access 15 miles, the first one said, sending her turning onto an empty four-lane road riddled with potholes. They passed abandoned industrial parks, large dirt lots with the burned-out remains of cars, scrub bushes, and shadow. The original barricades had annexed about a third of a small city, but by the time the towering gates were built, more like half the city was considered under quarantine. The walls of the cold towns went up with lots of regular people trapped inside. The rest moved as far away as they could, as quickly as they could. Every house they passed was dark inside. They drove for a couple of miles until Gabriel said, "You're going to have to restrain me." She looked at him in alarm, her hands jerking the wheel. The car swerved in its lane. The vampire grinned lopsidedly, showing one sharp tooth. "There's a checkpoint coming in maybe a mile. If I'm to be your captive, I must look the part. Otherwise, I'm bound to make them nervous." "A checkpoint?" Aiden said, leaning forward in his seat. "Like cops?" "Homeland Security," said Winter. "And sometimes the National Guard. He's right. People posted about them on the boards. They're just going to ask us what we're doing here. Probably try to tell us we're not allowed through. But they can't keep us out. They just bluster." Midnight looked up from her phone. "Gate guards think anyone who wants to live inside is scum." Her tone was acid. "They're not going to think that, since we've got him with us. They're going to think we're badass bounty hunters," said Aiden. Tana pulled onto the dirt shoulder of the highway with a sigh. In the distance, Behind a stretch of trees and down a slight hill, she could see a McDonald's with all the windows smashed in, graffiti covering the booths inside.
"How did you know about the checkpoint?"
Midnight asked Gabriel softly, leaning forward in her seat so that she was asking the question over his shoulder.
"Research," he told her, then turned to Tana. "Once we're there, you must go home. Death has passed you by twice, Tana. Don't court him a third time."
"No, she's got to come with us," Aiden said, leaning into the gap between seats. "You're coming, aren't you, Tana? You won't let me go on this adventure alone, will you?"
"There is nothing for her beyond those gates," Gabriel said. "Do you think to bring her along like a talisman to remind you of your humanity? Or do you think sharing your damnation will lighten the burden of it?"
"You seem to like her," Midnight said archly. "Maybe she'll lighten your burden instead of his."
Gabriel gave her a look as though he might reach into the back seat and snap her neck. Then he threw back his head and laughed an eerie, wild laugh.
"Clever girl. You play with fire because you want to be burnt."
"Midnight," Winter said through clenched teeth. Tana got out of the car, slamming the door behind her. The trunk was already half open, Gabriel having bent it when he kicked his way free at the gas station. It didn't close right anymore. She fished for the chain beneath Winter and Midnight's garbage bags, willing her breathing to even out. Gabriel caught her arm, his fingers cool against her skin. She gasped in surprise, pulling away and taking a staggering step back. She hadn't even heard him get out of the car.
"I didn't mean to," he stopped, and when he spoke again, he sounded oddly formal. "Tana, I have no skill in this. I am long out of practice at keeping my thoughts clearly ordered and the sort of persuasion that might convince you may be beyond my clumsy tongue."
He brought his hand up to touch her hair, the brush of his fingers so light that she wasn't sure if he'd actually touched her at all.
"You're brave, and you're good. Anyone can see that. You dared to save even an unhappy creature like myself, merely because I needed saving. You have parried everything this night has thrust at you. But surely it's enough. Whatever is driving you, please, please let it drive you no further."
"You think I want to die?" Tana said. "I don't. That's not what this is about."
He shook his head. "I mean only, do not come to Cold Town. You may love Aiden and you may think you can save him."
For a moment, Tana was confused. Then she remembered Aiden's arm slung over her shoulders as he introduced her to Midnight and Winter. "Oh, no, it's not like that. Aiden isn't my boyfriend. I know he said he was, but..." Gabriel's red eyes narrowed, but she couldn't read his expression. She stumbled on. "He used to be, and he just said that because that's the way he is." Tana peered into the back seat of her car where Aiden and Midnight were talking. Winter sat between them, fitting a cigarette into a long, pretentious holder, his body hunched forward. Tana sighed.
"He didn't mean anything by it. I think he thinks about girlfriend like some kind of honorary title, like the way that every president is still President so-and-so, no matter who's currently in office."
Gabriel started to say something else, but Tana held up her hand to stop him. She was babbling, but she wanted to see her babbling through. "Listen, back at the farmhouse, on my way out, one of the..."
"Monsters," her brain supplied.
"One of them got me on the leg. It's not deep or anything, but it was his teeth. He was trying to bite me. He did bite me. A little." Saying it out loud made it real all over again. She could feel herself start to shake. He looked at her with alarming intensity, his red eyes like hot coals.
"Where?"
She turned a little to show him the back of her leg. The dress was short enough to show the bottom edge of the scrapes. He crouched down, pressing cool fingers just above her knee. Her breath caught in surprise. He pushed up the hem of her skirt slightly, hands gliding over her skin, making the tiny hairs stand up all along her thigh. She threaded her fingers together, pressing her hands against the front of her dress,
against her stomach to keep them from trembling, to keep the rest of her from moving. She wanted to laugh, nerves jangling. It was so strange to be touched so gently by a creature like him, a creature who looked just like the kind of boy who you might let touch your thigh for a totally different reason. So you see, it's not like I have a death wish, or I'm into some kind of adventure tourism, or I knocked my head too hard when I hurled myself out that window. She realized that she'd started babbling again, but she didn't know how to stop. She thought about how she hadn't shaved her legs since Saturday night, and it was probably stubble. If the cops catch up with me, they'll dump me in some place for observation, and if it turns out I'm infected, then I get sent to Cold Town anyway. This way, I can get a marker and have a way out, if it turns out I don't get sick, or even if I do and I make it through somehow, I won't have to go in alone. So, you see, it all makes sense.
There's a very small puncture, he said, moving his fingers again. She bit her lip to keep from making a sound. Just one, and the scratch his teeth made dragging over your skin.
Deep? She asked.
He let the skirt of the dress fall and braced his hands on his knees, looking up at her. His hair was black as crow feathers and falling across one of his eyes. I can't tell. There's a bluish tint to the scab. For a moment, she couldn't breathe. Blue meant poison. Blue meant that, like some family curse, she was going to wind up just like her mother, hungry and sick and screaming. Blue meant the worst was likely happening.
Tana, you might yet be well, he said, but she didn't believe him. He was just being nice.
She heard the door of the car open and Aiden laugh.
What are you guys doing? I mean, she has good legs and all, but is this really the time?
Gabriel stood up slowly. Embarrassed over any possible guesses about what she'd been doing, and sick with the thought of the poison in her blood, Tana started to busily dig under Midnight and Winter's garbage bags to pull out the chains. She tried to look busy, hiding her face from Aiden. Grabbing the coiled metal, she rubbed her thumb over a link and realized that the steel was wound through with wild rose vine. Even upset as she was, her brain noted that was one of the things vampires aren't fond of. Soon, maybe, she'd find out for herself what was true and what was just left over from a thousand scary stories that weren't ever supposed to happen.
Hey, she called back to the car, her voice coming out unintentionally harsh. Anyone have a lock?
Midnight slid out.
I think there's one back there. We brought it in case we needed to secure a squat. Let me look.
She got closer to Tana and then stopped, studying her face.
Everything okay?
Tana nodded, wiping her cheek with the back of her hand. She hadn't even realized her eyes were wet. Midnight looked over at Aiden and Gabriel, then back at Tana, as though trying to read something in their faces.
We can tie him up, Midnight said finally. If you want, you don't have to do it.
No, Tana said, dragging the chain toward Gabriel. I'm fine.
Fine, fine, everyone's fine, said the vampire, a mad gleam in his red eyes, crossing his arms over his chest, as Bela Lugosi did in black and white films. Fine as scattered pieces of sand.
She wondered how much effort it had taken him to talk to her the way he had. To, what was it he'd said?
Keeping my thoughts clearly ordered.
And how crazy he was going to be now, as a result of that strain. She thought about him talking to the border guards and shuddered. She couldn't imagine herself changed into a being such as he was. He seemed as alien and remote as a distant star in the sky. Gabriel let Aiden and Tana drape him in chains, and let Midnight lock them tightly around him with Winter's old bicycle lock. Then he shuffled back to the passenger door and dropped himself heavily into the seat, cocooned in silvery links. They all got back in, Midnight maneuvering so that she was in the middle of the back seat, meaning Aiden was next to her. Winter gave her an exasperated look, which Tana caught in her rearview mirror. She felt strange as she pulled back onto the highway, her hands unsteady on the wheel. Somehow knowing that the scab was bluish convinced her that she could feel the swelling of the skin of her thigh around the wound, that she could feel the cold in her,
icy sludge moving through her veins. It was kind of a relief to know that the inevitable had come, though. She didn't have to be afraid anymore. What was happening inside her didn't care whether she was scared. The car rounded a curve and the checkpoint came into view. It was just a few cones and a single police car with lights flashing.
"Tell them I'm like you," Gabriel said as they began to slow down.
Aiden laughed. "I think they can see you're not like us anymore."
"No," he said. "Tell them you know me. That I'm like you, one of you, from the party. Tell them."
"Wait," said Winter. "Wait, is he saying he wasn't at the party? Did you meet him by the side of the road? Did you pick up a hitchhiker who coincidentally turned out to be a vampire?"
Gabriel fixed his gaze on Winter. "You know me," he said, and a chill went up Tana's spine. "You've known me since outside the rest stop, when I turned and the light hit my face."
"What does he mean?" Midnight asked.
"I don't know," Winter said in an odd voice. "Nothing."
"We'll call him Maynard McSmollett. He can be from two towns over," said Aiden, snickering. "No one really knew him that well. Kept to himself, but he was crashing the party because he could never resist a kegger." "Or how about Roderick Spoon? Roddy, the Rodster. He was in a band and played electric keyboards, but got kicked out of several schools for setting small fires." "Yeah, that's better. What do you think, Gabriel?"
And then there was no more time for suggestions, because the car was pulling up to the officer. A gloved fist tapped a heavy black maglite against the window. Tana lowered the glass, heart thudding dully. The guard was middle-aged, his short, military-cut hair peppered with gray, and his uniform not the kind that local cops usually wore. He had craggy skin and looked down at her with a lip curl of disgust.
"You kids can't be out this way. No sightseeing. Go on, turn around and..."
The guard shone the light in the car, stopping when it reflected Gabriel's garnet eyes. Gabriel grinned, teeth bared.
"See? We're not tourists," Winter said from the back.
The guard stepped back.
"You kids are crazy. Did you catch that thing?"
He's our friend," Tana said, hoping she sounded convincing. "Just turned. We're taking him to the gate."
"You better get on out of the car," said the guard,
reaching for his belt and detaching something from it. A weapon, Tana was pretty sure, until he brought a radio to his mouth.
"Or I'll take things from here. Jesus, you didn't even muzzle him."
"That's okay. We'll drive ourselves."
Tana looked ahead of them at the dark stretch of road. Bad things happened in places like this. She glanced at Gabriel, his gaze fixed on the guard's throat.
"Come and muzzle me," the vampire said, his voice like honey.
"Step out of the car," the guard ordered. "All of you, move now."
She jumped, startled. If she slammed her foot on the gas, she'd hit a cone and maybe the side of the guard's car, but she could get them past the stop. She took a deep breath and got ready. The Crown Vic was a heavy car, not the best acceleration, but once it got going, it stayed that way. And they'd have a head start. Maybe they'd even make it to the gate before they were arrested. But before she did anything, Winter leaned forward in his seat.
"Hey!" he shouted at the guard. "We've got rights! According to the law, we have the right to the bounty on him, so if you think you can scare us into giving it up, try again."
Tana looked at Winter in surprise.
"Damn," Aiden said under his breath. "You think he's gonna shoot us now? I'd really rather he didn't shoot us."
"Your friends, huh?"
the guard said with a sneer, leaning his head through the window and narrowing his eyes at Gabriel.
"You know what those friends of yours are planning? They're gonna sell you. We don't get a lot of corpses going in willingly."
Tana saw Gabriel's fingers moving, subtly shifting chain. He wasn't tied particularly carefully. In a moment, he'd work his arm free. In a moment, he'd grab the guard, drag him across Tana's lap, and sink his fangs into the man's throat. She saw the way it would play out, the shock, the screaming,
the geysering red running down the inside of the windshield. Maybe she was closer to going cold than she'd thought, because picturing it didn't horrify her. Instead, she wondered what it would feel like if it were her fingers closing on the guard's neck, her teeth tearing his skin. She imagined she could smell him, his stale cigarette breath, the brine of his sweat, and underneath all of that, welling up through his pores, the unique scent of his blood. Then the guard leaned back from the window out of danger and clicked a button on the radio. He spoke into the static.
Yeah, I've got a car of kids here with a corpse. Say, they're going to claim a bounty on it. Yeah, it seems in on the joke. I know. World's full of crazy.
Tana blinked herself out of her dazed imaginings to find they were being waved through the checkpoint. Chapter 14.
Post by Midnight. Subject: The 10 Most Important Things to Bring to Cold Town. Number 1. Cash, and lots of it. You can barter for lots of things inside, but cash is still the most important tool for bribing guards and getting what you want. You've been saving up, right? Bring every last penny. It's not like you're coming back. Number 2. Batteries, chargers, and extension cords. Small solar generator, phone, video recorder, plus your laptop, of course. You might have to bootleg your energy source to get your feet up and running, but then you'll be able to share your adventures with the rest of us and hear us pining away to join you. Having an effective way to communicate with the outside world might turn out to be profitable, too. Lots of Cold Town stars were just like you when they started. Number 3. Clean cannulas, hollow needle and length of tubing, and means of sterilization for venipuncture, rubbing alcohol, hydrogen peroxide, bleach, matches, or lighter. Think about putting this in a pretty case that you can bring to clubs or parties and show off. Sure, it would be great if you didn't have to use any of that, but most Cold Town vampires aren't going to bite you straight off. They only turn people they really care about. Number 4. Your stuff. Clothes, shoes, shampoo, perfume, jewelry, makeup. Only bring the things you really love, because once you're through the gates, you're going to be on foot and traveling light. But also remember that everything's harder to come by in Cold Town. Dragging a bigger suitcase might be worth it when you're trying to find that perfect outfit. Think about the person you want to be and the person you want to impress and dress for them. Number 5. Stuff for trade. Good booze, good weed, cans of luxury food, fresh produce, clothes, and medicine. Antibiotics, aspirin, and other painkillers are especially valuable. All this stuff will help you hold on to your cash reserves a lot longer, and maybe even increase them significantly. Number 6. Mace and other means of defense. We know how special Cold Town is, and we're such a supportive community online that it's hard to imagine there are people beyond the gate who aren't like us. But with no police or anything, we have to be careful. Newcomers are considered prey by bands of unworthy wannabes, so don't be taken in by the kids near the gate telling you about great squats or secret clubs. Don't let anyone touch your bags either, and be ready to defend yourself if necessary. Number 7. Something to make yourself stand out from the crowd. Whether it's your intricate poetry or the parrot skull necklace that shows your quirky personality, or the violin you've been practicing since you were a child. Bring the thing that shows off the way you're unique. You want the vampires to see why you deserve to live forever. Number 8. List of contacts. The great thing about these message boards is that we have friends who've already crossed over that can show us the ropes when we arrive. You'll want to get in touch with them and make a plan to meet up once you're there, so be sure you have information like addresses, phone numbers, etc., printed out in case of electronic failure. Also, sad to say, keep in mind that some people are more willing to share their connections and good fortune than others. If you get a bad feeling about someone, even if you know them from the boards, steer clear. Number 9. Your sponsors and ways to contact them. It's always possible that you'll run into a snag in your plans, run out of money, get robbed, or even get hurt. If that happens, you'll need to know the people who you can call on to send cash and extra supplies. Make sure you have the contacts for your parents, grandparents, distant family, friends, online blog followers, anyone who, in a pinch, might be persuaded to give you money. Remember, too, that being inside Cold Town, there are images and experiences that you have access to that you might be able to trade for what you need. It's not ideal, but it's something we all have to think about. Number 10, a buddy. Trust me, you'll need one. Chapter 15. To Die is Landing on Some Distant Shore. John Dryden. The gates loomed in front of them from several miles away, towering above the tops of trees and bright with floodlights. They'd been built after the outbreaks, at the height of superstitious fervor, and were constructed from planks of sacred oak, ash, and hawthorn, all soaked in holy water, and then nailed with thousands of silver devotional symbols from around the world. And beyond that, the tallest of the ruined halls, factories, and church spires were visible inside the walled city, some glowing with flickering light, some overgrown with a heavy carpet of ivy. It looked nothing like a prison. The gates seemed as if they were the doorway to an ancient temple or the opening to some enchanted country. Tana had seen them before, on the news, but somehow, in the footage from the helicopter-mounted cameras, they hadn't radiated the same feeling of majesty they did now. As they rounded a bend in the road, the guard station came into view. It was small and ordinary, resembling a toll booth. Two guards in heavy flak jackets stood together out front, sharing a cigarette. They looked up at the car when its headlights swung through the gloom, but they made no move to pick up their flamethrowers. "Pull in over there," Winter said, touching her shoulder and pointing toward a stretch of cracked asphalt curving down into the overgrown grass. Other cars were parked haphazardly, some covered in a thick layer of grime. A hand-printed sign nailed to the post of a streetlight read, "Temporary parking only," a corner of it flapping in the wind. Underneath it, another metal sign read, "Restricted access area, permit required." Tana pulled in and stopped her Crown Vic next to a beaten-up station wagon. She looked at the clock on her dashboard. In less than 2 hours, the sun would be coming up. "I'm going to walk over there and figure out the paperwork or whatever for bringing him in," she said, turning in her seat. "Winter, you better come with me, since you knew what to say to that guard." Winter glanced at Aiden warily. Aiden winked. "Here," Tana said, ignoring them as she pressed her keys into Midnight's hand. "If something goes wrong, just get the hell out of here before sunrise." "Oh, no," Gabriel said, pulling a hand free and unlooping more chain. "If there's trouble, I would be at its heart." "The sun's coming up soon," Tana reminded him. "And stop messing with the chains. You need to keep all that on until we get inside. You're still supposed to be our prisoner, remember? This is your plan." He shook his head. "You bid me to bide, but if I'm to burn, then surely you will let me put that fire to some use." If his lazy, crazy half-smile and the gleam in his garnet eyes were any indication, he meant every word he'd just said. He wanted trouble. But why he thought she could let him or stop him from doing anything, she had no idea. Midnight grabbed Furtana's fingers and squeezed them. "Just don't take any crap from those guards, okay? Get that marker. No matter what happens, it's worth a lot. We're going to storm into Cold Town like heroes, you know that? People are going to talk about us online for months." "Careful," Winter told his sister, nodding toward Aiden, who gave him a look of wide-eyed innocence in return, and then toward Gabriel, who was staring out into the darkness, thinking whatever thoughts blood-starved vampires who liked to quote Shakespeare had. "Oh, no," Midnight sounded giddy. "We left careful back home, along with uptight and normal." Tana got out of the car, taking a deep breath of air, leaving the twins to bicker. It was odd to be in such a desolate place and be able to hear the distant hum of music amplified by speakers and smell cooking on the other side of the gates. Not just cooking, either.
The scent of wood smoke and burned plastic drifted to her nose from the city beyond, along with another smell, a sweet foulness that took her a moment to recognize as rotten flesh. It made her think of sitting on the rug in the living room of the farmhouse with her friends' bodies around her. "Winter," she said. "Come on." For a long moment, he stayed where he was, staring at his sister, having an argument entirely consisting of things unsaid. Midnight played with one of her lip rings, turning it nervously. After a moment, Winter sighed and slid out of the car, slamming the door behind him. "The faster we get back, the less can happen," Tana said, hoping that would reassure him. She was nervous, too. "You're really going to Cold Town with us?" he asked, falling into step beside her as she crossed the empty black road. "Yeah, I guess." She took a deep breath. It was unfair not to warn them of the situation they were putting themselves in by traveling with her. "I'm infected, I think. I mean, probably. I've got a few hours before I'll be sure." Winter looked over at her in surprise. "Probably?" "It's not a good thing," she said. "Don't act like it's a good thing." He took out another black cigarette from his silver case, fitted it into his cigarette holder, and lit it. The air smelled like lemongrass and incense. "You want one?" he asked, his expression growing calculated. "They're herbal." Tana shook her head. She didn't want anyone to see the nervous tremble of her hands. The guards watched them walk closer. One was smoking, leaning against a flamethrower about the size and shape of a rifle. The other pointed his weapon directly at Tana. Both looked bored. "Everything okay?" the guard asked. Tana said. "Yeah. We want to know how to turn in a vampire for the bounty. The guy at the checkpoint called ahead." The guard flicked his cigarette onto the concrete and stomped on the butt. "You kids have a vampire?" He and his partner shared a significant glance. "Maybe," Winter said, taking a long drag on one end of the lacquered holder. The guard dropped down the barrel of his weapon and then leaned on it, mirroring his partner. He cocked his head to one side, evaluating them. "Okay, so if I were to go across the street..." "Just tell us how it works," Tana said. "We're going through the gates, all of us, and we want a marker." "Oh, yeah?" the other guard asked. "A bunch of kids want to go into the quarantined area with all the freaks and ticks. You get dropped on your head too many times? Your mommies not understand you?" "You say the company in there is bad." Winter tapped on his cigarette holder, causing a line of ash to fall to the dirt, and gave the guards his most sneering, contemptuous stare. "Seems like the company out here is even worse." The guards chuckled. "The office is that way," one of them said, pointing toward the administrative buildings to one side of the gates, built of stone, with a single window and a cheap, flimsy door. "You want to kill yourselves? Go right ahead. Just fill out the forms first. And if you got a vampire, well, congratulations. Just be sure he's not some kid with red contact lenses." They laughed again at that, clearly filing Tana and Winter into the slot of no threat at all. "Thanks, wow, you sure are helpful," Tana called back with clipped sarcasm, turning and walking in the direction they'd indicated. On the other side of the wall, she heard a high-pitched wail that sounded more animal than human. She shuddered. Winter looked back at the car and took a deep, shaky breath. After a few moments, it died away. Winter slowed his stride. "Why does he do what you say?" "The vampire." "Gabriel?" Tana shrugged. "I have no idea." "There must be some reason." Winter ground the stub of his cigarette against the wall. "He was chained up when I found him. The vampires..." Aiden heard them say that the thorn of something or another was hunting for him. "It's a Russian city. My brain's fried and I'm blanking on it. You know the guy, though. The one who killed that journalist in Paris. Gabriel is in some kind of trouble with him."
"Little mouse."
"An enemy of the Thorn of Istra," Winter said, an odd expression on his face. "The That's what he told you?
He helped me back at the house, Tana said, not sure why she was feeling defensive. Winter and his sister were supposed to love vampires so much they wanted to be vampires. Why should he sound as if she were demented for unchaining one? He's still helping us, remember?
But why? Winter asked.
No offense, I just don't get it. I'll bet he's been a vampire a long time, before the world went cold even.
Those old vampires hate humans, and they hate people like me at midnight specifically. Any vampire turned in the last decade, and anyone who wants to be a vampire.
And here he is, letting us restrain him, voluntarily surrendering to imprisonment in a cold town. It doesn't make sense.
I struggle for my most rational moments, Gabriel had told her when they were driving. She'd seen the strain of it since then, moments when he seemed lost and others when he seemed lethal.
I don't know, she said. He wanted to come to Cold Town, though. He's not doing it for us.
Winter took a moment to digest that, and then wrenched open the door to the office. A bell jingled overhead. He held it wide for Tana. She slipped past him and went inside. As she did, Tana thought of what Gabriel had said to Winter earlier.
You know me. You've known me since outside the rest stop, when I turned and the light hit my face.
Who was he that Winter could know him? She had a moment of anxious panic that Winter was playing her in some way, but she couldn't think how. Fluorescent lights overhead bathed the whole room in a harsh, blinding glare that made Tana blink several times. A counter of cheap laminate was covered in sloppy stacks of multicolored forms. Two pens, each attached to dirty string with even dirtier tape, dangled down from either side of the counter. Behind the counter were four metal desks. Only one of them was occupied. A large woman in a bright dress with big abstract poppies on it stood up slowly, as though her knees hurt. Her gray hair was piled into an impressive Danish-sized bun on the back of her head. She looked at Tana and Winter for a long moment, then walked over.
What do you kids want? It's 4 a.m.
Shouldn't you be in bed?
We want to claim the bounty on a vampire, Tana stammered.
She was unprepared for how much the way into Cold Town looked like a shoddily run DMV. The woman's eyebrows went up.
You some kind of baby bounty hunter?
Tana sighed. We just need forms for going inside, and we want to turn in a vampire for a marker.
Deregistration?
Now the woman shook her head. When she spoke, she sounded tired.
Don't be stupid. You don't want to go into Cold Town. Take your bounty for the vampire and live another day.
One marker isn't going to get the both of you out anyway. Tana looked at the clock. There's 4 of us, not counting the vampire, so please, just get us the paperwork. We know what we're doing. The woman sighed.
Everyone's always in such a hurry to rush off to their own death. Well, hold your horses a minute. We had a woman and her 3 children. Can you imagine? Through 2 nights ago, so I know the packets are around here somewhere. Just need to find my notary seal.
While she rustled around at her desk, Winter circled the room, stopping in front of a bulletin board with a sea of posters tacked up, one stapled over the next. Most advertised higher bounties for particularly famous or dangerous vampires. A few were from parents looking for someone to take on a commission to buy back their child with a marker, and begging for a hunter who'd charge them a price they could pay. Some promised rewards other than cash, cars, property, old engagement rings, stocks, and even the vaguely ominous, anything we have, anything you might want, anything at all.
Did you ever see the Matilda feed from a couple of years back?
Winter asked suddenly, looking toward Tana. The spikes of his blue hair had wilted, and his eyeliner was a little smeared under one eye, as though maybe he'd rubbed it without thinking. Tana shook her head.
There was this vampire, Matilda, who came to Cold Town. She infected another girl by accident. Well, the girl wanted to be infected. But anyway,
Matilda detoxed her and filmed the whole crazy 12.5 weeks. And the part that was really fascinating was that sometimes she would sit in front of the camera and talk about what it was like being a vampire. She told us about the people she killed, what blood tasted like, how her vision was different, how she was different. She wanted to warn everyone, she said, that being turned wasn't how the Eternal Ball or the Cold Town feeds made it look. It wasn't glamorous or special or anything. Tana watched his face as he spoke. And you still want to be a vampire? I mean, that's why you're both going inside. Yeah. Winter's voice was firm, but there was something in his eyes, fear and a kind of awful, drowning look, like a man who is slipping deeper and deeper into quicksand and knows that struggling will just make things worse. Messed up, right? But somehow Matilda made it seem real. Like, since it wasn't glamorous and special, then maybe I could have it. But I know it's what every wannabe coming here wants. Most of them are going to die without getting it. Get used for blood or get turned and find out they're not any better at their new life than they were at their old one. Tana didn't say anything. You think we're going to wind up like them, but we're not. I don't think anything, said Tana. He sighed as if he was annoyed but kept talking anyway. Midnight was obsessed with it before me. Immortality, the dark gift. You should have seen the walls of her room when she was 12. Scrawled with poetry about eternity and piled with animal teeth. Pastel candies in the shape of coffins, pages torn from Edgar Allan Poe books, pasted over her dressers and spattered with her blood. But I was the one that started going on message boards and meeting other kids who wanted to run away to Cold Town. After a while, Midnight wanted us to make our own board so we could talk about the real stuff. And eventually we realized that it was time to put up or shut up. So we know what we're doing, and even if you think... He stopped speaking abruptly, ripping a page off the wall. What is it? Tana asked. The woman walked back to the counter, nodding to herself and muttering. She put down a couple of forms in different colors. This isn't something you do on a lark, or because you're sad, or because you're young and stupid. It's forever. Thank you for the warning, Tana said coldly, gathering up the papers. You kids don't really have a vampire, do you? That's nothing to joke around about. You put down false information, and that's a crime. You'd need to present the vampire, or if it was a kill, you need to have preserved the head. Oh, we have a vampire, all right, Winter said distractedly, darting a glance toward the door. In fact, why don't I go get everybody? You can start the paperwork, Tana. Okay, she said, puzzled. On his way out, he shoved a piece of crumpled paper into her hand, the same page he'd pulled off the wall. I didn't know. Honest, I didn't, he whispered. I thought maybe, but I swear I wasn't sure. She tried to focus as the gray-haired clerk explained acceptable forms of identification and where Tana would have to stand to get her photo taken, and the dotted lines on which she needed to sign, but it was difficult. She kept getting distracted and looking back at the poster she was smoothing out, as though the image on it might change. The paper promised a $75,000 bounty for the kill or capture of the Thorn of Istra. But it wasn't the amount of money that shocked her. It was the picture. Despite obviously being the blurry copy of a copy of a copy, she knew him immediately. Gabriel looked as though he'd stepped out of the late 19th century, in a smart suit on an old Parisian street, a bow tie over the starched white collar, and a derby half-hiding his black curls. Gabriel, looking directly at the camera with a sneer on his wide lips and eyes that smoldered with banked fire. Gabriel, holding a walking stick in one hand as though he were going to whip the photographer across the jaw with its silvery handle. Her first thought was, what a funny mistake. The thorn was hunting Gabriel, had broken out of his cage underneath Paris to find Gabriel. And then she remembered, as she stared at the paper, how when Aiden had insisted the vampires whispering through the door were threatening to take Gabriel back to the thorn,
Gabriel had said.
Not exactly.
He tried to tell her, but she hadn't been paying attention.
Not exactly.
The thorn of Istra, the mad vampire. She thought of the grainy video of him she had seen, head tipped back, so covered in blood that she hadn't remembered his features, hadn't remembered him as looking like anything but a monster, laughing, endlessly laughing. Mad as a dog, mad as a god. Gabriel. Chapter 16. Death, they say, acquits us of all obligations. Michel Akem de Montaigne. All of Tana's holidays were awful. Her mother's parents would come and hug Tana and hug Pearl and talk about what a tragedy it was that their mother would never see how big they got or how pretty they were. Her other grandparents, her dad's parents, would say little digging things about the state of the house and the girls' wrinkled dresses. They would sigh over how the green beans were overdone or the roast was burned. Tana would hear them late at night telling her dad that he owed it to his daughters to remarry, that it would give them stability and self-esteem, that it would help Tana forget. Their father had grown up in Pittsburgh. He got a fake ID at 15 so that he could work in one of the two remaining steel mills with his brothers and father. He worked hard and managed to put himself through 2 years of community college majoring in business. From there, he got accepted at a state school in Philadelphia, working as a janitor at a hospital to pay his way. He met Tana's mother on the way back from the fireworks on the 4th of July. She was swimming in a city fountain while her art school friends only dipped their feet in. She looked like a beautiful nymph from a painting he'd seen in one of his classes. He waded into the fountain in his clothes, grinning like an idiot, and told her so. A few months later, they were married. He'd loved her more than he'd ever loved anything. She had been wild and full of manic energy, a whirlwind that could sometimes crash into deep depressions. But other times, she'd been gloriously full of fun. Without her at the center of everything, he was lost. No matter what Tana and Pearl's grandparents said, he wasn't interested in remarrying. Sometimes he went on dates, but they always ended quickly. He would come home and head into his old bedroom, a place that was left just as it had been since his wife died, for a while before retreating to the couch in the den where he'd slept since her death. The holidays stayed miserable. Tana's father was the kind of man who believed in doing the right thing, no matter what. Working hard, staying as honest as you could, doing what had to be done. Doing the right thing because it was right. And he believed that the right thing was obvious to anyone who took a minute to think about it. When his wife got bitten by a vampire and her fever spiked and her skin became chilled, when she begged him not to turn her in, he knew what he had to do. He didn't care about the government billboards and TV spots admonishing people to observe the quarantine. The rich bribed private hospitals to lock up their loved ones in very private rooms. And he knew there were plenty of other working stiffs doing what he did, turning their basements into makeshift prisons with reinforced doors and heavy chains. The way he saw it, locking up his wife when she'd gone cold was the right thing to do. So he did it. Saving his elder daughter from bleeding to death was the right thing to do, too. To keep her safe, he had to kill his infected wife, so he severed her neck with a shovel. He didn't flinch. He didn't hesitate. He had hated it, but he'd done it just the same. Even though it was a terrible thing. Even though he lived in the past now, plodding through life as if against a heavy storm, so distracted by grief that he could barely remember to do the grocery shopping or turn off the stove after he'd warmed some packaged dinner. Tana wondered if he had a fantasy like hers, one where he had been the one who was bitten, one where he and his beloved vampire wife were still together, one where they hunted the streets and swam in fountains under a fat, bright moon. Growing up, Tana thought that she and her dad didn't have much in common. Tana wasn't ever sure what the right thing was, but out here on the road, she couldn't help thinking of him. She wondered whether, if push came to shove and she discovered what it was she was supposed to do, she could be like him and be strong enough to do it, no matter what. Chapter 17. Coming that close to death, you get kissed. Deborah Winger. Winter came back with Gabriel, who was wound in chains and shuffling. Aiden and Midnight stood beside the vampire, helping him keep balance, while Winter dragged the garbage bags and suitcase that made up their luggage. With flamethrowers raised, guards marched the group into the little office. In the bright light, Tana could see that one of the guards was bigger than the other, with a spray of pimples across his chin. The second guard had the patchy peach fuzz beginnings of a blonde mustache. They were no longer laughing. They looked alert and shocked at having to be, as if it had been weeks since they'd seen any action, and maybe months since they'd had to deal with a real vampire. Gabriel had his head down, hair in his eyes, but when he saw her, he looked up and grinned as though he was having an enormously good time. She studied him anew. The black t-shirt that pulled tight across his chest, the way his black jeans hung low on his hips, the steady gaze of his red eyes. Those clothes weren't his, Tana realized. Those clothes didn't quite fit him because they belonged to someone else. Had probably been stolen from someone else. Probably someone dead. None of it was his. Tana's heart thudded dully. She thought of the necklace with the broken clasp resting at the bottom of her purse, of the random bills and his new boots. How many people had he killed since he escaped from his cage? The thorn of Istra, her mind supplied. That's the thorn of Istra. Lots. He's killed lots and lots and lots. Midnight was smiling too, looping her arm through Aiden's as if they were going to a party. She tossed her blue hair and Winter looked over at Tana, his lips pressed together as though he was biting back words. The gray-haired clerk behind the desk took a plastic card from where it hung on the lanyard beneath her shirt.
I'll swipe them into the holding rooms.
Who's claiming the bounty on the vampire? The pimple-faced guard asked.
I guess me, said Tana, half raising a hand as if she were in school. For a moment, she wondered what would happen if she named him, if she claimed the full bounty. It was a lot of money, enough to pay her sister's way through community college. For catching the thorn of Istra, they might even throw in the marker. Maybe she'd get her own TV show, Teenage Bounty Hunter. The thought made her smother a giddy laugh.
Take her into number 6, the other guard told the gray-haired clerk.
Where are you going to take... Tana started.
Worry not, Gabriel said, a smile stretching his mouth as he reached for the door handle.
I like surprises.
He closed his eyes. Long, dark lashes dusted his cheeks as he stretched out his arms, the loosely wrapped chains falling to the floor with a loud clanking sound, his lean muscles thrown into sharp relief under the lights. He looked as if he was getting ready for a fight. He looked more tranquil than she'd ever seen him. Well, so much for his appearing to be anyone's prisoner. Maybe what would happen if she named him was that he'd declare the ruse to be up and kill everyone, Tana included. Or maybe he'd just shrug a little ruefully and accept the betrayal. Neither was what she wanted. As a kid, she'd occasionally wondered what it'd be like to meet a vampire that had been alive for a long time. She'd imagined it being like meeting a very old person, someone with a lot of experiences and a bunch of weird stories about walking around during the French Revolution. But spending time with Gabriel, she thought that every day since the one he died was not one where he aged, but rather one where he grew away from humanity. He didn't seem older than he must have been when he died, just entirely stranger.
This way, a guard said in a trembling voice, and nudged the ancient vampire with the butt of his flamethrower.
Tana held her breath, but Gabriel did as he was told, disappearing through a doorway. Tana was led in a different direction and then up in an elevator. The clerk took her to a small, dirty, tiled room,
where she sat on a worn wooden bench and waited for a half hour, all alone. She thought about calling Pauline, about waking her up and telling her the truth, but her phone couldn't get a signal. Finally, a new guard came, looking tired, his eyes bloodshot, as though he'd been pulled from his bed in the middle of the night. He smelled like nicotine and mouthwash. His thinning hair was combed over his bald spot and still damp, probably from a hasty shower.
"Okay," he said, sitting down next to her.
He had a pen tucked behind his ear and a clipboard.
"There was a vampire attack. A bloodbath up north. Bunch of kids are dead. You know anything about that?"
"I was there."
She thought he probably knew it already since his expression didn't change. It seemed impossible that only a little more than 24 hours had passed since those vampires had crawled through the window of Lance's farmhouse. Only 10 hours since her leg got scraped by their teeth.
"I'm lucky to be alive. And Aiden, well, that's where he got infected. But I guess he's still lucky not to be dead."
Immediately, she worried that she shouldn't have said anything about Aiden, but the guard was nodding, as if she wasn't saying anything not already in the report. He nodded.
"How about the other one?"
She started to answer, but then she thought of the crumpled piece of paper in her pocket and what Gabriel had said before they were stopped by the first guard.
"Tell them you know me, that I'm like you, one of you, from the party."
Of course. He was hiding in plain sight. That's why he'd come with them, why he was helping them, because he was going to slip into Coldtown as just some newly turned vampire kid. He didn't want anyone to know that he was the murderous legend from the Père Lachaise Cemetery. The image of him laughing, covered in blood, came to her again, unbidden, along with the way he'd grinned at her in front of the gate guards. Maybe killing everyone in this building was his idea of fun. But he'd come to Coldtown for some purpose. Some purpose that required that no one knew he was coming.
"Gabriel? He's some private school kid who was at the party, got infected, drank some of my blood and turned. We didn't know where else to go, so I drove them both down here."
"It was their idea to turn themselves in?" Tana nodded.
"They don't want to hurt anyone."
She wondered if she might be laying it on a little thick.
"And how about Jennifer and Jack Gann? They say they caught a ride with you from the last stop rest area."
Tana smiled involuntarily at their names. They were just so regular. So exactly the kind of names Midnight would despise. Knowing them felt like having a powerful secret.
"That's right," she said. "They seem nice and they have some message board connections. So they offered to help us find a place to stay inside if I drove them."
"And you're making the same stupid mistake they are," the guard frowned.
"Kid, you're in shock. You've got survivor's guilt in spades. You shouldn't be making any kind of big decisions right now. Why don't we call your parents and get them to come get you? You can think about going into Coldtown later if that's what you really want."
"I'm getting a marker, aren't I?" Tana held her chin up. "It's not like I can't get out again."
"Your friends are dead."
"I get it. I saw the pictures. It must have been awful.
But those things out there, they might remember being human and they might ape being human, but they're not human anymore. It's supposed to be a quarantine in there, but it's closer to a zoo. Even with the marker, you'd have to take a blood test to be allowed to exit. No one infected leaves under no circumstances. No infected and no leeches get out, ever. Even with a marker. And there are lots of folks big enough and mean enough to jump you for that marker, too. There's desperate people in there."
"I know," Tana said. He cleared his throat, looking sad.
"I got a daughter your age. Tell me why you want to go in. Give me one good reason and I'll stop giving you shit."
"I'm probably infected," she thought. That would shut him up. But she didn't want to see the way he'd look at her once she said those words, as though she were already dead. She took a deep breath.
"It's not so much that I want to go," Tana said, trying to string together words that could tell some version of the truth. an honest answer she hadn't even given herself. No, that's not right. There's a part of me that does. My mom got bitten, and here I am, following the path of what would have happened if she'd turned. I'm curious.